Today's daf is Chulin daf Nun Tes. We are holding on daf Nun Chesam and Beis. We're at the Mishnah on daf Nun Chesam Beis. Today, the primary discussion of today's daf is going to be about the kashrus of different animals. What are the simanim that make an animal kosher or non-kosher? But first, we have to finish up with some more treifus issues. So it says the Mishnah on daf Nun Chesam and Beis, Achuzas Hadam, if an animal is seized by blood, some sort of blood disorder, Vahamu Ushenes, or an animal had inhaled a large amount of smoke, vamitsunenes, if the animal is very chilled, Rashi says, choli machmasina, an illness that comes about because of coldness, vishaachla hardufni, or if the animal ate something called hardufni, vishaachla tsoas tarnagolim, or the animal ate the excrement of chickens, oshashasas mayim haraim, or the animal drank bad water, meaning bad water is mayim agulim, Rashi says, water that has been left exposed, where we're always choshish that maybe there's some venom in the water. In all these cases, kshera, the animal is kosher, none of these things render the animal trefa. But if the animal ate poison, or it was bitten by a snake, then muteris mishum trefa, it's not a trefa, but vasur mishum sakanas nefashos. You're still not allowed to eat the animal because of sakanas nefashos, meaning just like you're not allowed to drink mayim megulim because of the chance that there's venom in it, so too, if an animal has gone through these experiences of eating samamaves or being bitten by a snake, you're not allowed to eat it because of the sakanas nefashos inherent in eating that animal. Amar Shmuel, he'll eat the chalasis trefa. If the animal ate chalasis, that makes it a trefa. My time, oh, why would eating chalasis make it a trefa? Because when it digests it, it punctures holes in its intestines, and therefore it's going to make it a trefa. Masr Rav Shizvi, so Rav Shizvi says, wait a second, our Mishnah seems to be in contradiction to the following brisa. Achuzas hadam vahamu ushenes, vishaachla hardufni, vishaachla tzoras tarnagolim, vishasas mayim arayim, hil'ita tia chalasis upilpulin, it puts all in the same category, whereas our Mishnah had divided in two separate categories. We had the Reish of the Mishnah that gave us a list of things that are kosher, and then the Seifa where it said things that are not a trefa but are a problem of sakana. Now in the Reish we had achuz adam ushenes mutsunenes achlar dufni achlat zos tarnagolim shasas mayim raim, but in the Seifa we had eating samamavas and getting bitten by the snake. Now over here in this Brisa, the way we have it is not only the achla mushenes and achuz adam and achla dufni and everything else, we also have hilita tia chalasis pilpulin and achla samamaves. Whereas hichlia chalasis Shmuel taught us is a trefa, and achla samamaves the Mishnah had taught us is sakonas nefashos. Hikisha nachash osha nashcha kelev shote muteris mishum trefa vasur mishum sakonas nefashos. The Brisa says that the only thing that's awesome mishum sakonas nefashos is if it was bitten by a snake, it was bitten by a snake or bitten by a kelev shote, by a wild dog. So kasha chalasis achalasis, kasha samamavis achamamavis. So we have a stira on two fronts, both by chalasis and by samamavis. Chalasis we thought was a trefa, and yet this brisa says that it's totally fine. Samamavis we thought was going to be asur mishum sakana. That's what it said in our Mishnah, that it's asur mishum sakana. And yet this brisa says that it's achla samamavis, that it's completely kasher. So says Gemara, neither one is a kasha. Chalasis achalasis lo kasha, kan ba'alim kan bekratin. It depends which part of the chalasis plant the animal ate. If it ate its leaves or it ate the grainy part of the chalasis plant. So one part would be a problem and make the animal a trefa. The grainy part would make the animal a trefa. The leafy part would not. Samamavis or samamavis lo kasha, and the stira about samamavis is also not a kasha. The fact that the Mishnah says if the animal ate samamavis, it's also mishum sakana, whereas the Brisa says that if it ate samamavis, it's totally fine. Hadida hada adam. It depends whether it's a samamavis that relates to the animal, or samamavis for animals, or samamavis for people. Meaning, is it poisonous for animals to eat, or poisonous for people to eat? As Rashi points out, Hadida Brisa Besamamavis to Behema Sheinu Samamavis to Adam. The Brisa that says that Samamavis is not a Sakana is talking about if the animal ate animal poison, but it didn't eat people poison. So for a human being to eat it, it's not going to be Sakana. Whereas the Mishnah, when it says that it's Sakana for a human being to eat an animal who had eaten poison, it means an animal that had eaten human poison. That's going to be dangerous for a human being to eat. So Samamavis to Behema Hainu Ardufnis, but the Gemara, why would it mention two cases that are exactly the same? That Hardufni is already mentioned in the Mishnah, and Samamavis the Behema, animal poison, is Hardufni. It's one and the same. So, or Hardufni, rather, is an example of Samamavis the Behema. So why would it mention an example and then mention the generality? So it says, where Trey Gavni Samamavis, there are two types of animal poison. There's regular animal poison, and there's Hardufni animal poison. The Mishnah just wanted to cover all of its bases. Now, why would it be usher to eat something that is sakana? So the Rambam writes that this is nisudar rice. So the Rambam looks for tzeich perikir al falach yedalid. Quotes the pasuk in Parshas Veschanan, he shomer l'chol shmor nafshecha. So we learn from there that you have to be very careful to guard your health and to not eat anything that's dangerous. The Sefer Charedim quotes a different pasuk, but the same idea. V'nishmartem ma'od l'nafsho seichem. The pasuk says that we should guard our health very carefully. Now, in truth, if you look at the pasukim, the context of both of those pasukim is not really about guarding our physical health. It's about guarding our spiritual health. It's all about shmiras ha-nefesh, not about shmiras ha-guf. But nevertheless, the Rishonim seem to understand that there's a dual meaning, and it also relates to shmiras ha-guf, even though in context it's clearly about shmiras ha-nefesh. So we always take sakana issues very seriously, to the point where Chazal have the expression that chamira sakanta meisura. Sakana is even more serious than issues of iser, and perhaps on certain things that we'd be makel when it comes to iser, we would not be makel when it comes to sakana. For instance, there's a machloka shach and taz whether sakana is batal b'shishim. When you have an issue of iser, there's no question that it's batal b'shishim, with certain exceptions. But generally speaking, an usher food, a non-kosher food, is batal b'shishim, or milk and meat is batal b'shishim. When it comes to iser, it's not so pashut. When it comes to sakana, rather, it's not so pashut whether it's batal b'shishim. That's the discussion when you have a mixture of fish and meat. If you have a sauce that has fish in it, can you put it on meat? Do you assume that bitul b'shishim works? So we're assuming that fish and meat is still a sakana, which the Magen Avraham happens to hold that it's no longer a sakana. Fish and meat together is no longer a sakana, according to the Magen Avraham, that we have no medical science that tells us that having fish and meat is a sakana. But nevertheless, most poskim say that we're still choshesh somewhat that fish and meat should not be had together. So is it batal b'shishim? So that's a machlokas between the shach and the taz. I think Rav Shechter told me once that he thought that the reason they made the policy at the OU that when there's shishim keneged fish in a product, they won't write OU fish on the product, because he says anyway you have the Magen Avraham that there's no problem with meat and fish anyhow. Plus, you have it's a machlokas whether fish is batal, maybe it is batal b'shishim. So between the two, he thought that there was enough to be some echad that people didn't have to be so machmir. If someone wanted to be machmir, they could read the ingredients and see that there's fish in it. They didn't feel that they needed to label OU fish. But that's just an example of where we're more machmir by sakana than we are, or we might be more machmir by sakana than we would be by iser in general. Okay, says the Gemara Vayter, my tia. What is tia? So Amar Rav Yehuda, ikra de marirta. It's the root of the marirta plant. Amar Rav Yehuda, haiman da achal tilsa tikli tlasa tikli chalasis aliba rekana mishtalach mishke. If a person eats 3 shekalim of weight of chalasis on an empty stomach, his skin is going to peel. Rashi says, "Mishalch mishchei nifshat aro shechalasis mechamamto ma'od." The nature of this plant is that it causes a person to have a very high fever. V'chazaso kadachas shekarin shaklofyun. And when he has the very high fever, is such a high fever that his skin is going to peel from the fever. So Amar Rabbi Avo, but didi avuvda. Rabbi Avo says, yeah, it's true. It happened to me. Va'achli chaltikal chaltisa. I didn't eat 3 shekels of chalasis. I only ate 1 shekel of chalasis. And had I not cooled down in a cool pool of water, then my skin would have peeled right off. The kiyamti ba'atzmi, and I was mekayim about myself by going into that pool of water, that achachma tichya ba'ala, that having wisdom will keep a person alive. It's because of this knowledge that I had how to cool myself down so that my skin shouldn't peel off, that it saved me. Amar Rav Yosef, hayman da'achol shitzri bayi, if a person eats the following diet, he eats 16 eggs, varbaya amguzi, he eats 40 amguzi, 40 nuts, v'shav butisa depirchi, he eats 7 caper berries, v'shasi riviyasa deduv shab tkufas tamuz, and he drinks a riviyas of honey in tkufas tamuz, in the middle of the summer, alibu rekana, and he does all of that on an empty stomach, misakar talya delibe, he's going to have a heart attack, or worse than a heart attack, the strings of his heart are going to be uprooted, which means, Rashi says, kol ikur chibur libo ne'akar, whatever's connecting his heart inside of his body is going to be severed and is no longer connected, going to connect his heart. And that's, Rashi says, kugondachul kulu, provided that he eats all of those things. If he doesn't eat all of those things, then this is not going to happen. But that's the idea. So Ahu Bar Tavia, there was a young deer, the Asal Be Resh Galusa, that was brought to the Resh Galusa for examination. Dava Mifsa Karan Basraisa, the hind legs of the deer were messed up. They were cut off at some point. So they had to check a little bit above the ankle of the deer. There's what's called the Tzomas HaGidin, a place where a bunch of the Gidin come together. And if that part is cut off, so that could make the animal a trefa. So Batki Rav Bitzomas Hagidin Va'achshere. Rav checked by the Tzomas Hagidin, and he said, okay, it's intact, it's kosher, there's no problem. Savor L'meichel Minei Bu'umtza. So he wanted to eat it the way he liked to eat his meat, which was Bu'umtza, Rashi says, means very rare. Eino Tzli Kol Kach B'tanur, not very roasted in the oven. Ela Molcho Ma'od V'tzoleu Koldu Ala G'chalim, very salted and then very slightly roasted. Roasted on some coals, so he wanted to eat his meat very rare. Amar le Shmuel, lo chayish mar le nikurei. So Shmuel said, well, wait a second, shouldn't you be concerned that maybe this deer was bitten by a snake? And it's granted, it's not a problem of trefus. You checked the Tzomas HaGidin, and the Tzomas HaGidin was intact, so you don't have a trefus problem, but maybe you have a sakana problem. So shouldn't you be choshish for the sakana issue? Amar le maitakanta. He says, okay, so what do I do? How do I examine to see if it was checked by, see if it was bitten by a snake? So Nosei B'Tanur Di'u Baduk Nafshei. He said, don't eat it Bu'umtza. Don't eat it this with this very rare cooking on coals. Put it in a tanur, and it will check itself. You'll see the way, if the meat does something very unusual, then that will be a simen that it was bitten by a snake. So Osvei Nafal Tilchi Tilchi. So he put it in the oven, and sure enough, it started falling into pieces. So obviously, that was the effect of the snake's venom that caused it to fall into pieces. So Kari Shmuel Aleid Rav, Lo Yuna L'Tzadik Alavin. So Shmuel said about Rav, he thought that this was very great, that Rav was Zoche to have this happen for him, that he ran into Shmuel just as he was about to eat it, because otherwise he was going to eat it. So he says, ah, it must be HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's watching you, Rav, that a tzaddik, something bad won't happen to a tzaddik. Kari Rav Alei to Shmuel, Karaz Lo Anaslach. Rav said about Shmuel, oh, you know the secrets of the universe. What are you talking? You're the one that had the information that I didn't have. I was going to eat it. So each one complimented the other. It's interesting that he quotes the pasuk when Shmuel says about Rav, Lo Yuna L'Tzadik Kalav, and we have... normally you would expect the Gemara to go into the whole discussion about how afilu behemten shel tzadikim HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not maybe takala al yadam, that even the behema of a tzadik HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't allow takala to come about for them to eat something that they shouldn't be eating from stolen items or whatever. So tzadik atzma lo kol shekein, that's but it seems to be the same idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't allow the tzadik to take something, to eat something that is usher to him. As long as the tzaddik's trying his best, HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't allow him to fall into such traps. Okay, says the Mishnah. Siman, now here we go into the simanim of what makes an animal kosher, what makes an animal non-kosher. I was in a taxi last week, and the driver asked me the typical question that you always get asked, which is, so you're a rabbi, so you're the one that gets to bless the food and make it kosher or not kosher? I said, if only I had that kind of power, traveling during during the summer, you know, when you stop at all these rest stops, it would be so much easier if only you could just bless the food. So no, I had to describe to him that there's a Mishnah in Chulin Daf Nun Tes, except I couldn't. He was a guy, you can't teach him Mishnayis, but you could teach him Psukim. So I was able to tell him what it says in the Torah, that there are certain simanim of Kashrus that it says in the Torah. So anyway, simani behema b'chaya nemru min haTorah, the simanim of behema and chaya, it says explicitly in the Torah what the simanim are. The simani of lo nemru, but it's interesting, when it comes to birds, the Torah just talks about a lot of birds. It tells us about a lot of birds by name, but it never gives us simanim of what makes a bird kosher, what makes a bird non-kosher. Aval amru chachamim, the chachamim gave a simon that kol of several simanim rather, but one surefire simon l'chumra, and that is kol of hadores tamei. Any oaf that's dores is tamei. What does dores mean? So dores means claw on some level. It means to claw, but that itself is discussion. What do you mean to claw? Rashi says oches b'tziparno v'magbia min hakarka masha ochel, that it picks up with its claws what it eats from the ground. Instead of pecking away at the ground like you see pigeons do, will peck away at the ground, it will pick up with its claw the food and then put the food in its mouth and eat that way. However, Rashi on Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph Dibra Maskel V'Hani Mili writes that any oaf that's nosein raglo ala ochel kishahu ochel umachziko beraglo shelo yanud v'lo yinatel kulo etel piv hidrisa, that if the bird holds down with its claw the food while it pecks away at it, that even if it's not picking up the food with its claw, that itself is called drisa, and that's how the Rambam writes in the Pirush HaMishnayis as well, like Rashi in the Sefer HaMa'oros quotes in the name of the Ravid that Amar Avram ani kibalti ov shadoris baraglav mashu ochel bein chai bein meis vafilu yirakos. We often think of dores as being some sort of vicious attack, that the bird just is attacks other birds. Not necessarily, the Ravid says. Even if it eats, if it's dores yirakos, if it's dores vegetables, dores is a way of eating. It's not necessarily relating to the cruelty of the bird. And the Ravid says beferish she'ein makun shum of v'shum chai, even birds that don't kill anything are considered dorsin, and that's the idea, is just that it holds it down or grabs the food with its claws. Tosos later on, Daf Samach Aleph, is going to ask on Rashi that, wait a second, even a tarnagolas holds the food down with its claws. So, and then we know clearly a tarnagolas is not a dores. So Tosos quotes Rabbi Natam, Dores for ochel mechayim ve'enu mamten la'chatamos. The dores means that the animal is going to eat its prey while it's alive and is not going to wait for it to die before eating it. And the Ran also quotes Rabbi Natan and says, he says, wait a second, the Rabbein Tam's whole problem with Rashi was that according to Rashi's definition, a tarnagolas should be labeled as an of hadoris, and we know a tarnagolas is kosher, but wait a second, according to Rabbein Tam's definition, tarnagolas should also be an of hadoris, because the tarnagolas doesn't wait for the insects that it eats, or the worms, or whatever it is that a tarnagolas eats, doesn't wait for it to die, so according to Rabbein Tam, you have the same problem. So the Ran explains that no, it has to be that it's dafka doris, that it's maka the bal chai bitziparnav, that it tries to kill the bal chai with its claws before eating it. But if it swallows it alive, then it's not called doris. So anyway, that's the definite simin lutuma. An of hadores is a non-kosher bird. Now, what about, are there any simanim of kashrus for a bird? So there are certain simanim. Kol sheyesh lo etzba yisera, v'zefek, v'kurkavnu niklav tahar. If it has three simanim, it has number one, an etzba yisera, an extra etzba, an extra toe on its foot that goes in the other direction, that goes backwards, and a zefek, and it has a crop, and kurkavnu niklav, the gizzard, which is in the stomach where it churns the food, the skin of the gizzard can be peeled off of the basar of the gizzard. So, and if it has all of those things, that's tahar. That's a sign that the animal is kosher. Again, provided it's not dores. Dores is a definitive sign that it's not kosher. So if it's not dores and it has all these three signs that say that it's kosher, so then it's kosher. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Kol ofa cholikas raglav tameh. There's another sign of a non-kosher bird, and that is if a bird is cholikas raglav, when it sits on a branch, it puts two toes in front and two toes in the back. So in the back of the branch, that's the way it sits. So that's a sign that the animal is going to be tameh. Now, if you look at Rashi Cholikas Raglav, he says explicitly that it's dafka two and two, that it's not three and one. Two and two would make it tamei. Three and one, maybe not. Rashi in Freishburg Marsh, Kshema Amidu Alachut Nosin Shteyetz Bos Mikan Ushtayim Mikan. Fine, that's in terms of birds. Now, it happens to be our minhag is that we don't need a bird without a mesora, because the Torah doesn't give simanim of birds, and these simanim are somewhat complicated that the Mishnayos give. We only eat a bird if we have a mesora that it's kosher. So we're much more machmir on birds than you would get from the Mishnah. Ubechagavim. Now, in terms of chagavim, in terms of grasshoppers, the Torah tells us that there are certain grasshoppers that we're allowed to eat. So which grasshoppers? What are the simanim kashrus for grasshoppers? Kol sheyesh lo arba raglay. If it has four legs, va'arba knafayim, and four wings, v'kartzulayim, and it has two extra jumping legs, like you see a grasshopper jump, that's not off of its four main legs, that's from these big jumping legs that it uses, u'knafav chofenes rubo, and its wings have to cover the majority of its body. Rabbi Yossi omer u'shmo chagav. Rabbi Yossi says it also has to be called chagav. If it's called something else other than chagav, then it can't be kosher either. So again, our minug, I think there are svarim or something, there are certain communities where they do have some mesorah and certain grasshoppers. Our minug, I think, is that we don't eat grasshoppers anyway. U'bedagim, now what about fish? So the Torah tells us about fish. Kol sheyesh lo snapir v'kaskeses, as long as it has snapir and kaskeses. Rabbi Yehuda omer, shnei kaskasin v'snapir echad. It needs two kaskasin and one snapir. Ve'iluhin kaskasin akavun. But the kaskasin are the scales. It's the part that's stuck to the animal, to the fish. U'snapir naporech ben. The snapir is the fins. It's what the animal. It's what the fish uses to swim. Now the Rambam writes in Machol Sasur Asuras Perikal V'Alach Chav Dalid, kaskesas means hadvuka b'chol gufo. That's attached in its entire body. Now that's a very unusual thing, because that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah just says it has to have kaskesas. It doesn't say b'chol, it has to be attached b'chol gufo. So what does that mean? What is the Rambam adding when he tells us that it has to be dvuka b'chol gufo? So the Magen Mishnah quotes the name of the Ramban in Parsha Shmini, that even though the kaskasin are kavua, hakaskasin heim osan aklipos haneklafos menu biyad obikli. You should be able to peel off the scales. If you can't peel off the scales, then it's just part of the skin, then it doesn't have a din of scales. But if it's kavua, he says, it's not niklefes me'orodah, it can't be peeled off from the skin of the animal, that is not a kaskasis. And that's why the Rambam writes, hadvuka b'chol gufo. It's attached onto the body, but it isn't actually part of the body. That's the definition of scales. Now the Biyuda is not so sure about this. Now the Biyuda Medurat Nyana Yerodeh Simul Chavches wonders, Mabakach she'en in the klefes. Who cares if it doesn't peel off? Where does it ever say in all of Babli Yerushalmi or Torah's Kohanim that it has to be able to peel off? He says, Adraba. Mish says, Kaskasna Kavuun Bo. That they're Kavuun the animal. Now the Biyuda dealt extensively with certain types of fish that were in discussion in the Rishonim. There was a fish called the Barbuta fish. That was the famous dream of the Rabbeinu Ephraim. That Rabbeinu Ephraim was matir the barbuta fish, and then he had a dream one night, that night that he was matir the barbuta fish, that they were feeding him something that was clearly non-kosher, and he said, no, sorry, I won't take it, I keep kosher. And they said, well, this is just as kosher as the barbuta fish that you were making with today, and he changed his psak based on that. So the Yehuda discusses, why in the world would you change your psak based on a dream? The dream is not a reliable way to paskin a halacha, and there's a lot of different shtus in dreams. And he says, must be Rabbeinu Ephraim himself had his sveikos, and that's why it was his subconscious that was talking to him, because he had his sveikos about the psak that he had given. But anyway, be that as it may, Nebuchadnezzar is not convinced by this requirement that it has to be easily peeled off. The Klechemda quotes in the name of Rav Bennett, in the Tshuva Sara Mar that the Ramban holds that kaskasin are like the fingernails or hair on a human being, that it's attached partially, very strongly, but on the other side it's completely hanging loose from the fish. Okay, so says the Gemara. Now that we know the simanim of kosher animals and non-kosher animals, Tan Rabbanan, Elu ain simani behema. So we have a brisa that lists off the simani behema. Kol behema mefreses parsa. The pasuk tells us the behema that's mefreses parsa. So it says the brisa, kol behema shemala geira biyodua shein lashinayim lamala. That any time you have a behema that chews its cud, you know that it doesn't have front teeth, upper teeth. Utahora, and therefore it's tahar. It doesn't have front upper teeth, and it's going to be kosher. So says Mara Klalu, is that really true that any animal that chews its cud doesn't have these teeth? And then we're also going to question the other assumption, that if it doesn't have these teeth, it's necessarily kosher. V'hare gamal d'mala geiruhu, v'ein lo shinayim l'mala v'tamei. A camel is mala geiru, chews its cud, doesn't have these upper teeth, and it's not kosher. We know explicitly that it's not kosher. So it says Gemara, gamal nivi isli. It does have certain teeth. It has canine teeth up in the front on the top. So we're talking about an animal that has no front upper teeth. Like a cow, that would be kosher. Vare ben gamel denivi nami lesle, but what about a very young gamel, doesn't have those canine teeth yet up in the front, and yet it's not kosher? Visu, and furthermore, I shuffin var navis to malz geirahain, v'yeshon shinayim l'malah v'tmein. You have these other types of animals that are mala geira, that chew its cud, and they have teeth in the front, but they're not kosher. So I thought you said that any animal that chews its cud doesn't have these teeth and is by definition kosher. So says more, va'ochi. And furthermore, it doesn't say anything about teeth in the Torah. When it discusses what makes an animal kosher, not a word about teeth. What it means says as follows. If it doesn't have these teeth, then you know it must chew its cud, and it has split hooves, and therefore it's a kosher animal. So it's not that the presence of the teeth is a definitive sign. If it doesn't have these teeth, then you know it chews its cud and it's mafresis parsa and it's tar. So it's frankly Gemara. But instead of looking at the teeth, v'livdok b'prasoseh, why don't you look at the hooves? See if it has split hooves. Go and try your prasoseh chatuchos. No, you can't look at the hooves because we're talking about an animal whose hooves were cut off. Uchad Rav Chista, and like Rav Chista taught, Am Rav Chista, hayim ahalich b'midbar. If a person was traveling in the desert, u'matza behema sheprasoseh chatuchos, and you find an animal that the hooves are cut off, so you don't know if it's kosher or not. Bodik b'pia. So all you need to do is give it a dental examination. Im ein lo shinayim l'mala. If it doesn't have teeth in the front upper part of the mouth, then you know that it's kosher. Imlav, if it doesn't have teeth if not, then you know that it's not kosher. So again, imlav means if not that it doesn't have teeth. If it does have teeth, then you know that it's not kosher. Ublavat shiakir gamal, as long as you know how to recognize a gamal, because a gamal doesn't have teeth and yet it's not kosher. But that's the only exception. So normally the dental examination is going to work as long as you know what a gamal looks like, because that's going to be the only one that the dental examination is not going to be indicative. So frankly, we're gamal niviously. What do you mean? By a gamal, it does have teeth. We just said before it has canines in the front. So gamal isn't really an exception. Elo blavachi yakir ben gamal. Now you need to be able to recognize a ben gamal, a young camel. That's going to be the exception. So lav amritika ben gamal ikanami miniachrin dami ben gamal. So frankly, Gemara, wait a second. If there's one exception, who's to say that there aren't more exceptions? I mean, if there's such a thing as a ben gamal that doesn't have front upper teeth and yet is not a kosher animal, maybe there are more non-kosher animals that don't have front upper teeth. How can we suggest the dental examination to figure out whether it's a kosher animal or not? So says Mara Lo Salkadaita the Tani Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Vesagamal Kimala Geirahu Shalit Ba'olamo Yodea Shein Lechadavar Malah Geirah V'Tamei Ela Gamal. The Master of the Universe knows that there is nothing that is Malah Geirah and is non kosher. There's nothing that chews its cud and is not kosher other than the Gamal. Lefichach Pirat Bo HaKasav. who? So we know that it's the only exception. The only example of an animal that chooses its cud and is not kosher is the camel. Everything else that chooses its cud is kosher. Similarly, if you're traveling on the road and you find an animal whose mouth is all messed up so you can't examine it properly, check its feet. If it has split hooves, you know that it's kosher. If it doesn't have split hooves, you know that it's not kosher. There's only one thing, you need to know what a pig looks like. Because a pig has split hooves and is obviously not kosher. So, frankly, Gemara, well, if there's a chazer that's no good, maybe there are other meaning that are also no good that are just like the chazer. How do you know that anything that has split hooves, as long as it's not a chazer, is going to be kosher? Maybe just like a chazer is an exception to the rule, there are other exceptions to the rule. Lo sal kadaitach. Tanu by Reb Shmuel v'sachazer ki mafres parsa. It says who? So shalit ba'olama yodeya. That's indicative that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. Shein l'chadover shamafres parsa v'tamei el chazir. There's nothing that has split hooves and is non-kosher except for a chazir. L'fich pir b'yakosov who? That's why the Torah says who? Meaning what it's telling us is a guarantee. You will never find an animal that chooses its cud. Other than a gamal that is not kosher, that does not have split hooves, and you'll never find an animal that has split hooves that doesn't also chew scud except for a chazer. A guarantee. This is one of the gemaras, one of the primary gemaras that they use in kiruv workshops when in Eish HaTorah, in the seminars that they present. One of the proofs of Torah Shebal Peh is how could Chazal have known this? There are so many species that were yet undiscovered. That how did they know? There are thousands and thousands of things that are discovered every day. How could they have possibly known that you're not going to come up with one animal that has split hooves and doesn't chew its cud? You come up with one other one and you've disproven the Masoras of Chazal. But no, Chazal had a Masorah from Har Sinai that could have only come from Shalit Ba'olamo, from the Master of the Universe, from the one who knows every species that exists in this world. Chazal themselves couldn't have known it. They had to know it dafka from a Torah Shebal Peh. That's one of the rayas that they bring. Vamrav Chista, Mahalich B'midbar, Rav Chista says further, if you're traveling in the desert, umatza behema shapia gamum, and you find an animal whose mouth is all disfigured, uprososeh chatuchos, and its hooves are cut off. So bodek b'besara, there's another way to check, see if it's kosher, you check the flesh of the animal. If it runs both up and across, then you know that it's kosher. But if the grains of the muscle of the animal do not run both up and across, then you know that it's tameh. You know it's not kosher. As long as you are able to recognize the wild donkey, which is the only exception to this rule. So frankly, wait a second. If an arud is an exception to this rule, maybe there's some other min that's also an exception to this rule. So says Gemara, Gemiri Deleka, we have a tradition that there's no other animal that's an exception to this rule. Vehicha Bodek, where do you check to see if it runs up and across? So Amar Abaye, Vitim Rav Chista, Bekanfei Uka, it's right by the tail. Right in the tail area, that's when that's where you check to see how the flesh runs, whether it goes up and across or in only one direction. Okay, simani chaya. So the Mishnah had mentioned simanim of animals. Tan Rabbanan, eluin simani chaya. So we have a brisa that says, what are the simanim of a chaya? So frankly, what do you mean, what are the simanim of a chaya? Chaya b'chal behem lehi the simanim. Chaya and behem are the same when it comes to simanim, and it's explicit in the Torah what the simanim are. For a chaya slash behema. So what are you talking about? What kind of question? What are the simanim of a chaya? So Amar Rabbi Zeira, no, we mean is to say not what are the simanim of an animal to make it kosher, but rather lahatir chelba. What are the simanim of a chaya versus a behema? What distinguishes a chaya from a behema in the sense that to be matir the chelav? That's one of the primary differences between a chaya and a behema, is that behema the chelav is asr, by a chaya the chelav is mutter. So v'achi kamar elei simani chaya shechel b'mutter. The following are the simanim of a chaya that by definition the chelav is going to be mutter. Number one, kol sheyesh lo kranayim vitalpayim. It has to have horns and it has to have split hooves then you know that it's a chaya. Rabbi Dosomer, yesh lo kirnayim, yet a tzarech lachzer al tapayim. If it has horns, you don't need to check for the split hooves, because if it has horns, it definitely has split hooves. Yesh lo tapayim, tzarech at lachzer al karnayim. But if it has split hooves, it's not necessarily going to have horns. You're still going to need to check to see if it has horns to determine whether it's a chaya. The keresh, afal pishein lo el karenachas, mutter. And a certain type of chaya called a keresh, even though it only has one horn, sounds like a unicorn, it has only one horn, nevertheless it's going to be mutter. The Gemara is going to discuss a little bit later on about this keresh. We don't have it apparently. The Gemara is going to discuss. Klalahu. So frankly, klalahu? Why? You're going to tell me this is a rule that if it has horns and split hooves, that's a chaya? We have a goat is definitely a behemoth, it's not a chaya. And yet it has horns, it has split hooves, and the chelev is also, we treat it like a behema, not like a chaya. So how can you say anything that has horns and split hooves is by definition going to be a chaya? Very, very difficult. So kruchos b'inan, says Gemara, no, the horns of a goat don't count as horns. The horns of a chaya, when we say it has to have horns, it means it has to have layered horns. Very shard the kruchos v'chel b'asr. What about a shard? Shard has layered horns, and its chelev is asr. It's still treated like a behema. Now, charukos, the horns also need to be, charukos b'inan, the horns also need to be grooved. Very aiz, the charukos v'chel b'asr. But the goat has grooved horns, and its chelev is asr. Mufutsalos b'inan, says Gemara, no, it needs to, the horns need to branch off in different directions. It can't just be one long horn. But wait a second, a deer's horns don't branch off, and the chelev of a tzvi is considered a chaya, but by this definition, that anything that has split hooves and branched horns is a chaya, well, tzvi's horns are not branched. If you ever seen a deer, tzvi's horns are branched. So this is a major discussion in the Rishonim over here. What's the Gemara talking about? Tzvi's horns do go off in different directions. So Rashi raises the issue. Lo yadana mai kamar. Davadei mafutsal osein. Rashi says, you ever see a deer? Of course its horns are branched in different directions. V'nir be'enai shemasha anu korin tzvi, lo yuahem korin tzvi. So you have to do one of two things. Either you have to change the definition of tzvi or change the definition of branched. So Rashi says, so tzvi isn't tzvi. Tzvi, what we call a tzvi, is not what the Gemara calls a tzvi. What the Gemara calls a tzvi is what we call steinbuk, some other kind of animal that doesn't have branched horns. Frektosos, oh yeah, but every other Gemara in Shas that discusses a tzvi, it seems to be describing what we call a tzvi. It talks about how a tzvi is in oro machzikas besaro. It's so muscular, it looks like the skin is not big enough to hold all of its flesh inside of it, that it's so tightly wrapped. It's exactly like our tzvi. And the Gemara Ksuva says that b'shoshu yoshinenu achas psucha, that when it sleeps, it keeps one eye open. And the Medrash and Shir HaShirim says, Dome dodu l'tzvi, my beloved is like a tzvi, ma tzvi zeh b'shoshu yoshinenu achas psucha, kach HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'shosh kalusim tzorosim, sho Yisrael nosinenu aleim l'shomram. Just like a tzvi sleeps with one eye open, so to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when we're in Golus, and Kaviyachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes are closed to us, he still has one eye open, still looking out for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always protecting us. But bottom line is, this is a clear description of what we know of as a tzvi. So how can you say tzvi is not a tzvi? So says Rabbi Natan, no, don't change the definition of tzvi, change the definition of mefutzalos. Mefutzalos doesn't mean branched. He says, v'achigar Rabbi Natan, the gears is not mefutzalos with a fey, mevutzalos, a beis, kolomar, zekufos, v'rasheim kfufos, v'shal tzvienim kfufos klal, that mevutzalos, it has to be that it's bent over, whereas the tzvi's horns point straight up. Even though branches in different directions, they point straight up. That's what it means. And says Tosas, and even if you're going to be gores mifutzalos with the pei, still you don't have to worry. You could still say my pshat, because a lot of times the pei and the beis are interchangeable. We'll say hefker with a vase instead of hefker in the Mishnah Peah, and other places where you find the pei and the beis are interchangeable. So Tosas says that it's not that a tzvi is not a tzvi, mifutzalos is not mifutzalos. That's the way you have to change. But anyway, answers the Gemara, chaduros bi'inan. that they also need to be rounded. Hilka chechad miftzala lo dina v'lo dayana. So if it's, let's go with Rashi, if it's branched, then there's nothing to discuss. Hechad lo miftzala, if it's not branched, well then you need to check further to see if it could still be a chaya. Bina kruchos, chaduros, v'charukos. It needs to be layered, rounded, and grooved. V'hu de mivlach hir kayu. And that's provided that it's that it's mivlach hir kayu. What's mivlach hir kayu again? That its grooves are swallow into each other. Okay, v'hainu sveika di izakarkus, and that's the suffix about the izakarkus, whether what its status is exactly, whether it's a chay or not. Ha'izakarkus davai be reish kalusa. There was an izakarkus that was brought by the reish kalusa da'akur malit sina d'tarbamine, that it was uprooted from it a basket full of chaylev. Ravachai asur. Ravachai said the chaylev is asur. It's a behema. Rashmol b'reid Rav Yavo achol minei. Rashmol b'reid Rav Yavo ate from it. He yelled that the chaylev was mutter, that it was a chaya. Kari anafshe, and he said about himself, mipri pi ish tispa bitno, that I'm able to satiate my stomach based on what I paskin, because I paskin, I hold that it's mutter, that this chaylev is mutter, based on my own tradition. The Ein Elio points out that l'char it's difficult, because you're not allowed to eat something that's hara b'chacham, that a chacham had to paskin, and over here there's clearly something that required hara as chacham. So if you remember, we said earlier, mem dal and mem beis, that if you have a specific mesora, then you're allowed to eat from that which was hara. So that's what he's saying. Because I have a mesorah that I was able to give over balpen, that I was able to receive balpen, that's why I'm able to eat from it. Shalchu mitam milchsa kavasei d'shmol. So he sent a message from Eretz Yisrael that the halacha is like Shmuel b'reid Rabbi Avo, that it's really kosher. V'izor b'Rabbeinu Achai shemei reine golahu. But be careful about Rabbeinu Achai, because he is meir reine gola. He's a very great rabbi. And Rashi says, what does it mean? Be careful about Rabbeinu Achai. Rashi says, linog bo kavod. Be respectful. And be careful not to paskin against him unless he changes his mind. Don't be matir right in front of his face that which he asers. The Yamshel Shlomo in Simon Kufid Beis writes that it's right to behave this way by all Gedolei Adar, not just by Rabbeinu Achai, that if they have a hora that something is aser, you shouldn't be matir right in front of them, even if you paskin that it's mutter. V'keresh af b'shein lo l'keranachas mutter. We mentioned the one-horned keresh is mutter. Amravu the keresh tavyu de be'ilai. What is the keresh? It's a tavyu de be'ilai. Tigras is Arya de Beilai. Tigras is the Arya de Beilai. Amrav Kana, Tesham Hasa, Havi Ben Una Lu Una da Arya de Beilai. This Arya de Beilai is another mysterious creature. There are 9 amos between the 2 ears of the Arya de Beilai. Amrav Yosef, Shitzer Amhasa, Havi Mashkit the Tavi de Beilai. The Tavi de Beilai is 16 amos long. Again, humongous animal, we're not familiar with what this is. So Amrav Kesar Reb Shua Ben Chananya. So the Kesar said to Reb Shua Ben Chananya, Elokechem Ka Arya Matil. Your God is like is compared to a lion. That's supposed to be a reference to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Kesar challenged Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanani. He said, "My Rabusei, Pirsha Katel Aryeh, a lion could be killed by a warrior. So what's so great about comparing HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a lion? That's saying that God could be defeated." So Amalei Lav Kahay Aryeh Matil Karid Bei Eloi Matil. No, when we say Aryeh Shag Milo Yira, that's not talking about the lion that you see in the zoo. That's talking about the Aryeh Bei La. So the Kesar said, yeah, I want to see that lion. I want to see that animal. I'll show you the weakness in that animal too. So said, I'm sorry, you can't see him. What do you mean I can't see him? I'm the Kesar. Let me see him. So Reb Shua ben Chananya davened, and the lion, the Aryeh Debei Lai, came out of its place. When it was 400 parsaos away, so niem chad kale let out one roar. Afilu kolma avarta, apilu kolma avarta. Every pregnant woman immediately miscarried from the fear, the fright of that roar. Vishura deraminafel, and the walls of Rome came falling down. Ademerchak tlas mea parsi, when it was 300 parsaos away, niem kalachrina let out another roar. Notar kachi vishine de gavri, people's teeth fell out from the fright of that roar. Va'afu nafu mi korsai la'ara, and even the Kesar himself fell off of his chair because of that roar. So that was when it was 300 parsaos away. So Amalei, now the Kesar realized maybe he didn't do such a smart thing by asking to see this Aryeh Debei Lai. So he said, Matusu minach, bayu rachmi alei de lahadil duchtei. please daven for it to go back to its place. I'm not interested in meeting it anymore. And it went back to its original place. Now he didn't daven that it shouldn't roar anymore. He didn't daven just tell it not to roar anymore. Ben Yada explains because it's the teva of a lion to roar. You're not supposed to daven for a nes. You're not supposed to daven for things to go against teva. It's not against teva for it to go back to its natural environment. That he was able to daven for. Okay, we'll continue with more stories of conversations between the Kesar and the Chachamim tomorrow.